presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Absolutely incredible coverage of Kendall Milton, the five-star running back's official visit to Georgia this past weekend. Jeff Sintel caught up with Chris Milton heading into the weekend last Friday. I guess it was Thursday night, either way. And caught up with Kendall Milton, the five-star running back, yesterday. The story you probably have already read at DogNation.com. In a little bit, I'm going to do a lot with Jeff on that as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update, so we'll do that coming up. Before we get to that, though, I want to do something else, if you don't mind. I want to focus on the dogs on the field here for 2019, and something in particular that the former Georgia great David Pollack told Mike Griffith in a recent conversation that Mike had with Pollack. So here is a quote that jumped out at me. I'm going to tell you the word in particular that jumps out overall when it comes to everything, above everything else. So David tells Mike about the defense, the Georgia defense here for 2019. You've got plenty of guys back there, but defensively, now listen to this question. David asks, can they get back to dominating? Can they get back to being one of those teams that creates a lot of turnovers and you see those savage pads coming out? Now, we can push aside for the moment whether or not turnovers is a sort of symbol of domination, if that's evidence of domination or not, but that's what David says. He asked the question, can Georgia get back to dominating defensively? And I think that dominate's kind of an interesting word. First of all, it's a fun word for fans to use. For those of us who, like myself, who likes to make a big deal out of the Florida rivalry, the idea of going to Jacksonville and dominating Florida is always a lot of fun to think about. Or whether it's the Tennessee rivalry, I know for a lot of folks in West Georgia over at Callaway Resort and Gardens this past week, they're like, BA, we live down here near Columbus. There are Auburn fans everywhere. That's the team we want to see Georgia dominate. One way or another, dominate's just a fun thing to think about. But I think that dominate's also one of those things that, when it comes to defense in college football, also has, even if it's not a specific meaning, we kind of know what that looks like when we see it. A defense that kind of removes all hope from the opponent. A defense that goes out there and just eliminates any chance of offense being produced, of scoring points, anything along those lines. We know what domination looks like from the defensive side of the ball. We know that when we see it. And it's probably true that maybe we haven't seen as much of that from Georgia under Kirby Smart on the defensive side of the ball as we would like. More on that in a moment. It's also probably fair to point out that dominate is a word that Kirby Smart actually makes a regular part of his vernacular as well. Let me go back in time here before the start of the 2017 season. The idea of domination, Kirby Smart said before that year, that was absolutely a goal for his team. Here is what he said then.
As much as you guys want to say they're all talented and they're all this and that, until they actually prove it and they go out on the field and they dominate, I'm not going to be happy with their performance because I think that they should do that.
So Kirby Smart says right there before the start of the 2017 season, my standard is domination. That's what I want. I'm looking for he means team overall, but in this case, defense in particular. I'm looking to see domination. That's when I'm going to be happy. When we have vanquished all hope from the opponent, that's when I'm going to be happy. And Kirby said that before the start of the 2017 season. He essentially said very close to the same thing before the start of last season as well. Here is Kirby again on this same subject.
We want to create that brand that we expect to go out and dominate our opponent. That's what we thrive to do. That's why we go and lift weights. That's why we go and run. We want to dominate every opponent. That's our goal, is to go out and dominate our opponent. It's not about what you guys think, what the fans think. It's not about any of that. It's about what we can do to make sure that our players are playing at the highest level every week in and week out. And that's our ultimate goal.
So Kirby Smart says our ultimate goal is to have a brand of domination. We want to be known as the program that dominates. And for the defensive-minded head coach, you imagine that when he thinks about that domination, a lot of that he thinks about is on that defensive side of the ball. That is what he wants to see. However, as I said before, when you look a little more deeply at the stats, even though Georgia's had incredible success the last couple of years, including a college football playoff appearance in 2017 and back-to-back division winning seasons when it comes to the SEC East, in terms of being a dominant defense, David Pollack says that's what Georgia needs to get back to. Really, the last few years, Georgia hasn't really done that as much as you might think under Kirby Smart. Let me give some stats that kind of back this up. If you look at the S&P Plus, this is kind of an advanced analytics efficiency type metric rating system used by the stats guru Bill Connelly. If you look at Georgia last season, Georgia was 8th in those rankings, which is pretty good, certainly among the national elite, but the teams that beat Georgia and the team that won the national championship are all ranked higher. LSU higher on that list, Alabama higher on that list, the national champion Clemson higher on that list. So Georgia better than almost anybody else in the country, but the teams that beat Georgia a year ago and the teams that Georgia aspires to be better than, including the national champion Clemson, were all higher. Look at 2017, Georgia just 12th in these same S&P Plus defensive rankings. Go back to 2016, Georgia was 14th. So even though the overall team performance for Georgia was a lot lower in 2016 than it was in 2017, 2018, the defense wasn't a far cry all that different. Very good, but stopping short of being truly, you know, among the two or three best in the entire country and on par with the national champion there in that regard. Now, it would be fair for you to say, well, B.A., I don't really understand these numbers, these S&P Plus defensive numbers. That doesn't mean a whole lot to me. I can see that Georgia's not one of the two or three best, but it doesn't really mean a lot to me, you know, where Georgia comes in those rankings. So let me give you kind of a different statistical measurement that maybe helps explain this a little bit better. Why is Georgia, and I use air quotes for this, only eighth best in 2018? Because, let's face it, most teams would obviously aspire to be eighth best. Georgia was eighth best. That kept them just below the Alabamas and the Clemsons of the world. Why was Georgia only eighth best? Well, let's look at some of the more basic statistics in terms of how many points they allowed. Georgia was 14th last year in scoring defense. Once again, that's really good, but it's probably not quite dominant. Georgia was 31st a year ago in rushing yards allowed. That's better than most teams in the country. That puts them, what, in the 80th percentile or so? I'm probably terrible at math. But nonetheless, it's pretty good, but obviously, once again, not quite dominant. And 12th last season when it comes to passing yards allowed. Once again, that's pretty good, but not quite dominant. Same thing in 2017. Georgia was sixth in scoring defense. The shutout against Tennessee, the 7 points allowed versus Florida, certainly helped with that, but just 20th in rush defense and just eighth in passes yards allowed in 2017. Once again, a history of being really good under Kirby Smart defensively, but stopping short of the standard that Kirby Smart has for this program, which is domination, and the challenge that David Pollack issued to Mike Griffith at DogNation.com of once again being a dominating defense. It's also worth pointing out some outside critics of the program are kind of touching on this a bit as well. Remember that Lindy's preseason magazine preview that we talked about on this show a couple of months or so ago about the anonymous coach quoted in that magazine kind of asking some tough questions about the Georgia defense? Let me read this as a reminder about Kirby Smart, that he hangs his hat on his defense and Texas shredded his defense. Oklahoma did the same thing 2 years ago. That gives people an idea how to move the football on Georgia's defense. Here's the part that may be most interesting. Texas, the anonymous coach says, ran it right up their butt. Oklahoma beat them on the perimeter. And you can't say Georgia ain't got players. Once again, that's an anonymous coach quoted by Lindy's in its College Football Preview magazine about Georgia being maybe not quite as dominant on defense as Kirby Smart wants this program to be or the national championship standard might require you to be. Now, here is where I think we kind of get to what might be a bit of a happy ending. It is probably true that as of yet, Georgia has not quite been as dominant as it needs to be if it wants to knock off an Alabama or a Clemson, if it wants to go on the road and beat a team like LSU or go on the road and beat a team like Auburn in 2017, two teams that also ranked ahead of Georgia defensively in those particular seasons. But when you look at the work that's been done in recruiting, and you see the additional crop of talent brought in here, it's why a Nolan Smith matters. It's why Jermaine Johnson matters. It's why a N'Kobe Dean matters. It's why, you know, guys like, you know, Lewis Seen and Tyreek Stevenson and the, you know, the crop of 2018 signees who are now a year older and more seasoned and experienced. It's why all that talent matters. I think that it's probably true that heading into 2019, Georgia probably has an overall collection of defensive talent greater than any other year that Kirby Smart's been in the program. And they're going to need it. If you're going to be better than Alabama, if you're going to be better than Clemson, if you're going to keep those teams to the low enough point total to go out and win those games or create the kind of havoc that Kirby Smart talked about all spring, you're going to have to use all that talent to your advantage. And what does it all add up to? It adds up to a defense that maybe finally in 2019 will do what David Pollack wants and Kirby Smart has said that he wants, going out there and actually dominating. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. Live on video today, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon, of course, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And we are available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. And by the way, when you are there at DogNation.com, I want you to go click on the link. Let's talk about Dog Nation Days of Summer rolling on again on Thursday, August 1st at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. Now, I know many of you have a little bit of, is it FOMO, the fear of missing out? You are afraid that you did miss out on what happened at Callaway Resort and Gardens this past week. Well, let me tell you something. We're going to have as much fun coming up at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa, and my personal invitation is for you to join us. Now, what I'm going to say to you is going to sound like hype, the kind of thing I'm just supposed to say speaking to this microphone. Trust me when I tell you that this is true. We have been talking so much about our early event, but also mentioning the second event as well, the one here at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. And as we've been saying that, we've been selling rooms for Brasstown virtually every single day. So when we started off at Callaway, we had a lot of VIP rooms to offer and a lot of space for you to be a part of that. And over the course of time, we sold those all out. Well, listen, we've already sold a ton for Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa, so much so that I had to go speak to my boss here this morning and say, do I still have some VIP rooms I can offer? Do I still have a chance to invite people to be a part of our VIP reception and be a part of everything that's going to go on there for that? And he said, yes, but BA, these are limited. We got a small couple handful of these left. So y'all don't wait, because I'm afraid that once these things sell out, they're not going to open up any additional space on the VIP part of this anyway, because we are kind of limited from space on that, the size of the venue for the VIP reception and kind of everything else, the gifts that we give away. We have to put a cap on this at some point in time. So please, please, please get in there. Go to DogNation.com. Find the link to a Dog Nation Days of Summer at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. Get in there and get that booked before they are gone. Thursday, August 1st. Can't wait to be with you all up there in the beautiful North Georgia mountains of Towns County, Georgia. Very, very close to Lake Chetuke. A wonderful, wonderful place. And we can't wait to be there with you on Thursday, August 1st. All right, before we get Jeff Sintel coming up in just a moment today on Dog Nation Daily, let me point out something to you that I want to make sure you're aware of. Jeff Sintel has started kind of doing kind of a, what's he calling this, like a mini intel or whatever, and there's a forum at forum.dognation.com. When you go to the forum, you can see some additional recruiting information in addition to the stuff that he's putting on out on the regular basis at dognation.com. So I hope that you'll check this out. One thing in particular I thought was kind of interesting that I'll get to in just a moment, the idea that Joshua Braun, who's going to be on campus, was on campus for his official visit to Georgia this past weekend. Braun told Dog Nation, I guess, told Jeff Sintel. Jeff put this in his piece there in the forum at forum.dognation.com. Can I see the quote from Joshua Braun to Jeff Sintel about this, about his official visit, saying, "It went great, and after Kendall Milton saw me and Tate Ratledge side by side, the message kind of composed itself," Tate said, in terms of, I should say that Joshua Braun said in terms of what Kendall Milton probably thought about that, that he wants to be at the kind of program where these big-time offensive linemen are congregating. Ratledge already been a commitment to Georgia for a while. Joshua Braun just in the fold on that visit together. And pretty clearly, this is something that Chris Milton has noticed here. He's talked about this himself, the father of Kendall Milton, because the quote that he gave to Jeff Sintel going back to Friday was the hellified offensive line. He says, "Georgia and how they're putting this hellified offensive line together, it is big. I mean, it's the number one offensive line in the country, in the nation as an offensive line." But then he goes on to say, "But at the end of the day, the onus is on Kendall to read his blocks correctly. The onus is on Kendall to hit the hole when he's supposed to and do all that stuff. We absolutely look at all the resources here, but we truly understand it's what we do in all those resources that makes all this stuff manifest." First of all, I love the word manifest. What a cool word for Chris Milton to use. The overall, the point that I'm getting to here, though, is that Joshua Braun says, when Kendall Milton sees me and Tate Ratledge together, and maybe even eventually another offensive lineman like Andrew Rame, who is also there all together, he says that message to Kendall Milton kind of composes itself of, if you come here, you can be blocked for by offensive linemen like this, and that's certainly a terrific opportunity. And, of course, that relationship that these guys have with each other is something that's aided Sam Pittman on the recruiting trail for quite some time. Let me go back in time here to a couple of weeks ago to something that Josh Braun said at the time about why he was even interested in Georgia in the first place, because of the friendships that he has with Tate Ratledge and the push that guys like that are having on him to make him better. Here's a little more from Josh Braun.
"They're great academics, but aside from academics, Tate Ratledge just committed. Playing with him would be good for my game. It'd be good for his game. Through the years, if we played together, we'd have a pretty solid tackle base. And there's another tackle coming in, I believe. So I think they have two. The guys in my class will be best in the nation. The defensive linemen I'd be playing against would be best in the nation. If you're going against those guys in practice and playing with those guys on Saturday, you're going to be prepared for whatever comes at you. And so that's what I'm attracted to at Georgia.
Yeah, it's already been well chronicled that this could be the best offensive line class ever compiled by any one program at any one time. Connor Ollie's done some good work on that at DogNation.com, and that's what attracts a guy like Josh Braun. And it's interesting to hear Braun say that he thought that was also an attraction for the five-star running back Kendall Milton as well. What else is attractive to Milton about the University of Georgia? What else did he like about his official visit? I'd invite you to read the piece at DogNation.com from our Dog Nation recruiting insider Jeff Sintel about all of that. But I want to go into a little bit more detail on some of that. So let's welcome in Jeff as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. And of course, it's great to have all of you with us as a part of Dog Nation Daily as well.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We will say hello to Jeff Sintel, and good to have him with us as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update today. And Jeff, as you might imagine, this is one of those days where I've got a lot with you I want to cover. And a lot of this is related to the piece that you wrote yesterday with the interview from Kendall Milton coming off of his visit this past weekend. So if you don't mind, let me kind of dive into this. I think one of the things that was really interesting, and you touched on this, we talked about this yesterday in our program, the edit that Georgia did for him, kind of honoring the passing of his great-grandfather, what would have been his birthday, with Milton on campus there yesterday. That's a really kind of tricky subject to get into and kind of a touchy thing. If you don't know a young man well, to tug on those heartstrings that way or attempt to tug on those heartstrings that way can come across as a little bit of phony or fake. The fact that Georgia did do this, though, and the fact that it was well received by the Milton family, doesn't that speak to the nature of their relationship right now?
Yeah, Brandon. Hey, good morning, everybody. It's kind of like, I don't know, when you saw the edits prior to that, and let's call them prequels because I know Brandon thinks in his Star Wars like mind here. Well, you saw like some sort of Da Vinci Code where the previous edit, which kind of foretold the official visit was on the way, it already showed that Georgia knew about the tattoo a little bit because he was looking down at his arm, and most people thought that that was the symbol where the guy's just, you know, he's just taking some blood from the ice water in his arms or whatever. But that was more to that. And when I saw that initial edit, I thought, okay, Kendall Milton is pointing to that tattoo, which means a great deal to him for a reason. And then Georgia continued to uncover that throughout his official visit.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And, you know, something else, Jeff, that kind of jumped out to me from your piece with Milton was the fact that he mentioned DeAndre Swift by name and discussed the very likely possibility this is Swift's last year in a UGA uniform. It clearly shows you that Milton and his camp are doing their homework, and it clearly shows you that a chance to be, you know, among the featured backs for Georgia by 2020, it clearly shows you that's heavily on their mind, is it not?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that, you know, two of the majority main suitors for Milton have a tremendously talented, a stout back, an A1A back, let's call it, J.K. Dobbins at Ohio State, and then also DeAndre Swift at Georgia. No surprise to anyone that these players are already showing things to their fan base that foretell that Roger Goodell's league will come calling very soon. So what his family has clearly wanted from the jump is they have wanted a place where they can come in and be a number one or a number two. And I think Georgia fans might be delirious with the fact that if Zamir White is back and rolling for the 2020 season after a very promising, maybe even here's what you're going to get season in 2019, the fact that Kendall Milton, 6'1", 220, Zamir White, 6'1", 230, 235, could be the lead backs for Georgia behind the Great Wall of Pittman, or the Great Wall of Georgia, I think the physics behind that will be very, very delightful for Georgia fans to consider.
And then obviously the thing that you notice, a lot of other Georgia fans have been talking about as well. In fact, I think we have this to show, the fact that Milton tagged, you know, Sony Michel and Nick Chubb and Todd Gurley in a piece where he, you know, showed himself off wearing those Georgia uniforms, the black jersey, the white jersey. He tags the great recent former Georgia running backs in all of that. You know, it's long been assumed that that legacy for Georgia, the running back position, I mean recent legacy, two of those guys coached by Dell McGee, the current running backs coach, that helps Georgia. I won't pretend to know for sure what Milton's going to do when he ultimately makes his decision, but it seems pretty obvious that seeing those guys have success in the same offense that Milton would be playing for, it seems pretty obvious that has an impact, does it not?
Yeah, and I think the big things here, Brandon, is this just makes sense. Because the way I understand the recruiting world and these high school young men, their shelf life on backs and tradition goes back about 4 to 5, 6 years. I think the fact that Todd Gurley stars in California is also a benefit to the Bulldogs here. I think right when Kendall Milton was getting cozy with Georgia, right around the end of last season, that's when everything started gearing up. He also saw two Georgia tailbacks in the Super Bowl. Tony Michel, New England, Todd Gurley with the Los Angeles Rams. I think that all this really helps Georgia in this favor. But the one thing I'll add to your initial opening thought there, Brandon, is that I don't think Kendall Milton will be able, if he chooses Georgia, will be performing in the same type of offense that Todd Gurley or even Tony Michel or Nick Chubb had. Because when you remember that 2017 Glory Boys offensive line, it had true freshman Andrew Thomas. It had a senior in Isaiah Wynn. It had Kendall Baker, a guy that didn't even wind up starting his senior year at Georgia at the left guard position. Lamont Galliard was a stalwart. And then you had Ben Cleveland and Solomon Kinley there at the other right guard. So right there with Georgia, they keep building and improving. And I think Kendall Milton, should he choose Georgia, will have the fortune to run behind as good as Georgia could ever get on the offensive line.
It's a really interesting thing to think about. It's our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update here with Jeff Sintel as a part of Dog Nation Daily. Of course, each week Jeff gives us his twist on UGA recruiting. But when you want chef-inspired food with a twist, you want to check out the Marlowe's Tavern right there in your neighborhood. And if you want to find out about big events, special offers happening at your local tavern, make sure you become a Marlowe's Insider by texting the word Marlowe's. It's M-A-R-L-O-W-S, M-A-R-L-O-W-S, to this number, 24242. And you can find out about all the great things happening at the tavern right there in your neighborhood. Let me do one more thing before on Kendall Milton before we get ready to move on here. When we think about Milton and those who've been trying to sway him towards Georgia, we think in terms of some of these other 2020 commits. Obviously, Mekhi Sherman has been the most open probably in pushing for Milton. But it was interesting to read in your piece at DogNation.com that another former kind of Pied Piperish type player, very outspoken recruit Nolan Smith from the 2019 class, it seems like he had some sway on Milton this past weekend as well. I was interested in hearing that, Jeff, just knowing how big of a personality Nolan was in the previous cycle, to hear that he might still be having an impact for Georgia on the recruiting trail.
Yeah, you got to remember, he's a five-star, nation's number one player from a year ago. And I think, Kendall used the term close friend or very close with Nolan Smith. But when he spoke about the relationship, he didn't say Nolan was all on him about, you got to come here, you got to be the man, Georgia's the place for running backs, yada, yada, yada. Or I'm going to tackle you on Monday and Tuesdays and leave you alone on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. It was basically just friendship. It was basically just doing things that 17 and 8-year-old, I'm going to call them knowledgeable, intelligent, worldly young men talk about these days. And, with Kendall Milton, let's be clear on this. This kid, this young man, let me make sure I back that word up. This young man is a very purposeful dude, a very driven dude. That's why the effort we made there to tell his story about the edit, the plan, his tattoo, and the incredible significance that will mean to him throughout his life. What he sees with Nipsey from his native California about making it and then doing something for your community and your people and those who come up around you when you do make it. These things are all very important for him as he builds his brand and creates these chapters of his football career.
So a last thing on Milton before we turn the page on something else. There was a lot of seeming celebration from, I mentioned Sherman a moment ago. He seemed to be very happy about something on social media. Other guys kind of got involved with that a little bit as well from that contingent of Georgia commits. Any idea what that might have meant? Any thought that they were somehow happy themselves with the way things went with Milton? I know that Milton's going to play this thing all the way out, but hard not to notice that a couple guys who've really wanted Milton as part of Georgia's class seemed really happy after this past weekend on social media.
Seemed really happy, didn't they, Brandon? I mean, what's our lexicon here today, these days on Dog Nation Daily? We've got follow the visits, we've got follow the follows, and we've also maybe need to add enjoy the emojis or something like
something
that
along
to
those lines, yeah.
To the phrasing. I'm just going to be as transparent as I can here. That was a lot of coincidence, not to be just pure circumstance there. Seemed like everybody who was anybody in on these group threads who that were connected to the Georgia program maybe got some clarity regarding a certain something. Maybe it was the fact that the crawfish in Athens taste great. Maybe it was the fact that black jerseys are going to happen this fall. Maybe it was none of that, and maybe it was something simply about some good news that was happening on the recruiting trail that the rest of the world are going to have to wait a little bit and find out about.
So when you say crawfish, I'm assuming you're referencing the Kirby Smart suddenly a lot more active on Instagram as of late, and his Instagram story the other day. I tried to find this video last night. I think it was already gone. But he kind of showed the low country boil they were having there as a part of, I guess, hosting these recruits. Jeff, I don't find reason to criticize Kirby too much. I am going to criticize him a little bit, though, for his low country boil here. For me, I saw, you know, crawfish, which I don't mind, but not enough shrimp, not enough sausage. I didn't see enough of that in that low country boil. So maybe it worked on the recruits. They all seem to be pretty happy on that. I could have used, at least in my eye, I didn't see as much shrimp or sausage in that low country boil as I would have liked to have seen.
You know, Brandon, we've never discovered this topic, but let's just go ahead and plow right through. To me, you got to have crawfish at least once. I had some dear friends in Alabama. They always had a crawfish bowl that kind of signaled the beginning of summer.
Yeah.
They had it in their driveway. And, you know, those mud bugs are a delight and they're tasty. But I think most, including a certain offensive lineman that everybody on Dog Nation will read about today, most find that the effort it takes to get to that little bitty chunks of meat there for the crawfish, I kind of equate it to you somebody having to block three or four guys for a four-yard gain against Missouri. That's just a lot of work to get to that meat with the crawfish. I'd love to hear what Chef Adams has to say about that.
So I would agree with that. The solution to that problem is you just eat a lot of them, and it looks like Kirby Smart certainly had that taken care of. I actually hadn't had crawfish myself until about a year ago, and I really enjoyed it. So it's definitely a part of my summer repertoire to be sure. You mentioned Andrew Rame, another one of those big guys that was there for Georgia this past week, and it sounds like you've got some stuff coming up with him at DogNation.com. Any preview of that, this young man from Oklahoma, also one of those big names that's out there right now? What can you tell us ahead of what we'll read later on at DogNation.com on this?
Yeah, so Brandon, you don't get mad at me, sir, now, but I know you like to look for those little nuggets and those little previews or glimmers. Well, we started something, I think, when I came back from Italy, I had a moment of clarity about what can I do more for the forum? And I know I have a certain writing style that I like to do where I try to define these guys as young men and I try to write about them, not just their recruiting. Well, I kind of wanted to add a dual threat to our Dog Nation game a little bit. So what I do now is I have a little intel drip. I think that's what I'll call it right now, a little intel drip on the forum where I kind of preview things that are going to come up on the main side. I guess this would be teaser trailers or something like that, but I had a conversation with Mr. Rame recently, and on last night I put a little bitty tidbits about Andrew up on the forum. And it's a forum only thread. This type of stuff hasn't even shown up on DogNation.com yet. But Andrew Rame has basically whittled everything down to three finalists: Oklahoma, Michigan, and Georgia. Michigan will be his official visit this weekend. And he's not certain, Brandon, that he is going to take any more visits after that. He even said, and everybody lean in real close here, that he was expecting to make his decision within about a week to 10 days. So for a guy like me that's been following Andrew Rame for at least 6, 7, 8 months now, he was a guy that always wanted to make his decision known on an All-American game, on that All-American stage. And he realizes now that he's just done with all the recruiting. He wants to get it over with, and he wants to get it done. And I would look for that decision to come down the track, like he said, at least within the next 2 weeks, and likely maybe more like within a week.
So maybe this is just a coincidence, but to hear Andrew Rame accelerating his recruiting process sounds a little bit like Kendall Milton, who's also accelerated his recruiting process incredibly as well, now wanting this thing done in July as opposed to at one point in time when I thought might go all the way to December. Is this a coincidence? Is Georgia pushing these guys one way or another? I don't want to say maybe pushing is the wrong word, encouraging these guys to make quick decisions on the basis of the fact that Georgia doesn't have a ton of scholarships to throw around this year? Or are these two situations totally unrelated?
Well, it's interesting. With Rain, he says he feels no pressure from Georgia. He just wants to get it done. And we'll explore Andrew Rain. I know what you're getting at there, sir, with Georgia's got four commitments already. Could Cedric Von Prahn or Andrew Rain be five? And if so, do they have room for six? Will there be enough room in the end? What I think here, and maybe this is something that 12-year-old Jeff or 11-year-old Jeff will think about, I think a lot of finishing moves, kind of like Mortal Kombat, are coming on right now with Georgia in their recruiting. I mean, they're dropping the gear. They're going down to the floorboard. They're hammering down. I think Georgia's trying to close out a couple of these recruitments, especially. Another little tidbit we dropped on the forum is just a definition of the calendar, because the dead period is going to come up, I think, June the 24th. And that's going to be no more visits at all until July the 26th or 27th, I believe. So there's a whole month in there where there's going to be no more visits. So everybody's trying to get that done. You've seen a lot of Georgia coaches this week going on vacation. I think they're still hosting an official visit right now. But after this weekend, everybody will think, okay, everybody will think the Kendall Milton weekend in Alabama as well. But after this weekend, these early officials, which are kind of the vogue thing now, haven't seen those a lot except the last year or two. These summer officials, spring officials for these up-and-coming rising senior prospects, those will be over, and everybody will get down to the nitty-gritty of the season at hand. And then there will only be a contact period that opens up for about another week. And then from August 1st to August 31st, there will be another dead period where recruiting will kind of back burner a little bit, I feel, rightfully so. So all these young men and all these coaches can focus on their high school seasons and on the upcoming college football seasons as well.
All right, let me spend a couple minutes here as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update talking about some guys that were not on Georgia's campus this past weekend. Rick Gilbert, I'm presuming, made it to Tuscaloosa for his official visit to Alabama. And, Jeff, I guess by way of question here, it sure does seem like that Gilbert's visited a lot of other places other than Athens as of late. Anything that Georgia fans need to know about where things stand with Gilbert? Georgia has hosted some tight ends. A lot of tight ends other than Gilbert have recently named Georgia as finalists. Is anything going on here between Georgia and Gilbert? It seems like Georgia's talking to a bunch of tight ends and Gilbert's talking to a bunch of other schools. I'm probably reading too much into that. Anything you can tell us on that front?
Yeah, well, let me see if I can approximate this the right way here, Brandon. I don't think it's nothing to worry about, and I don't think it's what's wrong with Georgia recruiting. I think it's somewhere in the middle here with Mr. Gilbert. I think Tennessee has given him pause. Tennessee recruits him as a wide receiver and not as a tight end, and that's why you see Georgia and you see these names. Jalen Conyers was there this weekend. He's actually the nation's number three tight end. You see Theo Johnson, and we talked about him ad nauseum. He's the number four tight end. And then Malik Carr was also at George Jones' official visit this weekend, and he is regarded as the nation's number five tight end. Well, the number one and number two tight ends in the country are actually Notre Dame commitments, which prove that one school can rack up with two top talents in that position. But the other names to think about there, Darnell Washington, who's actually now eclipsed Eric Gilbert as the nation's number one athlete. I think Eric Gilbert is the nation's number two athlete. Those guys are like number 11 and number 12, respectively, in those 24/7 sports composite ratings. So what all do I just say there? Well, you've really got about five guys that Georgia's looking at for two tight end spots. And I think the Georgia fans should kind of warm to the fact that maybe it's not Gilbert, maybe it's not Washington, maybe it's not both of them, but it very well could be a collection of maybe one or two of those names from that, deep group. And, credit to Todd Hartley here, the first-year tight ends coach at Georgia, for basically collecting a who's who of the elite tight ends of the country and positioning Georgia very nicely for all five of those guys right now. And I know what you're thinking, Brandon. You're thinking Gilbert, in-state prospect, Georgia. If that's a swing and a miss for Gilbert, that's going to mean something. And it will. and it will mean something if that happens. But right now, I'm going to come back to the initial thesis statement there and say, it's not what's wrong with Georgia recruiting. Ha ha, everybody laughs about that. It's kind of an inside joke. But it's not quite exactly nothing to worry about either.
Well, Jeff, we appreciate your honesty. It's not exactly what I'm looking to hear, but we appreciate your honesty nonetheless. Let me do two quick names with you before we let you go. Any update on four-star wide receiver Marcus Roseme going to Florida for his visit this past weekend? That's a name that we've mentioned on Before the Hedges before as possibly being a Georgia connection. I know that Georgia's, I guess, among his finalists there. Any thoughts on Roseme spending some time in Gainesville? He tweeted out some pictures of himself wearing that hideous looking orange and blue. Any thoughts on Roseme?
Well, first of all, I'm laughing at your adjective and your descriptor you used right there in that sentence. Well, let's go ahead, headline, Brandon. Let's go ahead, headline. Shocking. Marcus and is not committed yet. Headline. Marcus Roseme leaves Gainesville as an undecided prospect. I'm sure you can't believe that happened. Here's what's happening with Roseme. Orders that he is down to Final Two, and that's Georgia and Florida. And I know that sets up for a gleeful moment for you, sir, if it goes a certain kind of way.
Yeah, it does. I mean, because, I mean, we've heard other people, you know, say before that the Florida interest was tepid at best. And so if it's now, as you're saying, down to a Georgia-Florida situation, I mean, I'm sorry. I feel pretty good about that. I know we had a little bit of a cell phone issue, but you alluded to the fact that he goes to Gainesville. He leaves without, you know, committing to Gainesville. It seems to me, Jeff, just kind of looking in on this, this is another moment where Florida didn't sell itself as well as Gators fans would have liked to. Is that fair to say?
I don't know. Maybe he just put on the right color uniform, Brandon. Did you see this weekend that Nudie McLaughlin also tweeted out some pictures in that Florida gear, that clean Florida gear? Can you even call that clean Florida gear, Brandon? What would you call that all white and blue look by the Gators?
No, listen, whatever clean is, that's the exact opposite of that. I can promise you that. It's probably not quite as obscene to some people's eyes as it is to mine. I will certainly grant that, but that is far from clean, at least from my perspective.
Listen, Brandon, your mind found the truth word for you right there. You found a word that rhymes with clean. You found obscene. And
yeah,
that's exactly right. How the Brandon Adams I know think.
All right, let me do one final thing with you. And, Jeff, this to me is just plain weird. It's a name I've actually brought up to you a couple times over the last few months, but I saw where former Georgia signee Nadab Joseph recently put out on Twitter, and I don't know if we have this or not, but Joseph put out on Twitter that he was re-offered by the University of Alabama. That was the school that he was committed to before flipping to Georgia on signing day, before eventually kind of getting himself into a little bit of an academic situation, then seemingly for a while was even away from football. Now he's back and back on the open market. He's been offered by a ton of programs recently. Mel Tucker offered him to Colorado, for instance, and now apparently Alabama has re-offered him as well. I realize that the Georgia letter of intent that he signed before the 2018 class on a binding referendum, he's kind of free to do what he wants. What is the latest on this? Is Georgia still interested? Presumably a player good enough to play at Alabama would also possibly be good enough to play at Georgia still as well. Where do things stand with Nadab Joseph as of late?
Yeah, Joseph's going to be intriguing. Everybody wants to see what his film will look like. Everybody wants to see, you know, how well he would work out, especially underneath the watchful eye of a lot of evaluators and coaches. The thing with Joseph, though, is what really goes through my mind here, sir, is that, again, that's a different Georgia. Georgia has a specific kind of DB board right there, Avante Williams, Keely Ringo. You keep going down the line. There's Darian Greek Warren. There's Chris Thompson Jr. There's a lot of options for Georgia in the 2020 cycle at defensive back, especially a guy like Nadab who could play. He's more of a Devon Wilson type, actually. He's more of a guy that could play a star, could be a safety, could be a cornerback. But here's what I think on this one. Those are in the days, as hard as it may seem, just two recruiting cycles ago before Georgia would land and get in the program, a guy like a Tyson Campbell, an Eric Stokes, how he blossomed, Tyreek Stevenson, DJ Daniel, Lewis Seen, on and on and on. I mean, in Georgia, when you look past Georgia, you look past J.R. Reed, and you look past Richard LeCount, which is what we should be doing if we cover recruiting. Who would be the next guy? Would it be Otis Reese? I think so. Would it be Lewis Seen? Yes, I think so. Is it Devon Wilson? Is it guys like William Poole still in the program? Is it guys like Chris Smith still in the program? I think those are a lot of names to wonder about in terms of who would be the safety depth for Georgia in 2020 and 2019. You also need to remember the name Jalen Kimber, who's committed, Tyreek Stevenson, who's also in the program. I don't think Georgia sees or needs an Adab Joseph as much as it did back then when it was still trying to find its kind of alpha, do-it-all, feel good about the back end, lock down the back end so everybody can then create summer and spring headlines about wreaking havoc up front. I think with Joseph, I think it's an interesting story, though.
Can I give you like a 15-second follow-up, and you can have a very short answer to this if you would like to, because I know I've kept you very long. The fact that Joseph essentially counts as a free player because he's already signed at Georgia, wouldn't that give him some additional value in comparison to other guys that Georgia might bring in just because he would only count against the 85 and not against the current signing class?
Yeah, that's the number to think about there, Brandon, and you're right on point with that. He wouldn't count in the year-per-year allotment, but that can get tricky and can get fudged a little bit. I don't think fudge is the right word, but manipulated, or you can back count guys to certain classes. I think the number everybody's concerned about is the 85. It's the 85 with total guys enrolled in the program under the NCAA mandate. And you got to remember with Joseph, he's still a guy that has to go through a junior college season, has to, you know, make sure he stays on track with his academics. And this is a player here who might only have 1 or 2 years left in the program before he would bolt pro as well. And I think maybe the Georgia, specific to this DB class, is, might like the prospect or 2 or 3 years with Avante Williams, 3 years with Avante Williams, 3 years with Keely Ringo, of course, 3 years with Jalen Kimber, 3 years with Chris Thompson, 3 years with so on and so on along the DB board now, rather than maybe a 1 or 2 year cycle with a guy like Nadav Joseph. And got to remember, folks, I think if his grades weren't an issue and he would have had a clear transcript all the way through, he would have been a clear Alabama signee. And now that Alabama is in the mix there with Nadav Joseph, I think it says a lot about what Alabama wants for its defensive back forward and what Georgia wants with its defensive back forward compared to what it realistically thinks it can pull in.
Jeff, really good stuff. Thanks for your twist on UGA recruiting here as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. And, of course, chef-inspired food with a twist. It's always available for you right there at the tavern in your neighborhood. Simply text the word Marlowe's to 24242, and you can find out about all the great things happening around Marlowe's Tavern. Jeff, I look forward to seeing you tomorrow for Before the Hedges. We appreciate your time, and we'll look forward to speaking to you then.
All right, guys. Have yourself a happy Tuesday.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So a few interesting things from Jeff Sintel there. And let me do one thing on Adab Joseph and one thing on Rick Gilbert, and we'll move on to our SEC Through here. It has been well chronicled in the past that the term DGD can mean a lot of different things. You know, for some guys, that's 50 years of contributions to the University of Georgia. For other guys, it may just be a single moment. Am I wrong for saying that Adab Joseph is a DGD? That he allowed Georgia to have the number one recruiting class in 2018, and there's something at least kind of cool about being number one. So Joseph coming to Georgia as part of that class, even if he never takes a snap for UGA, he gave Georgia a little cachet there, and I think that being number one gives you some momentum for future recruiting work there as well. So from that standpoint, listen, if Joseph wants to go play somewhere else, so be it. That's fine. The fact that he signed with Georgia gave Georgia probably enough extra points to move over and become the number one class for 2018. Nadab Joseph is just fine with me. However, I will say that I'm still kind of intrigued by a player that's generated this many scholarship offers seemingly without doing a whole lot from a football standpoint since not enrolling at Georgia when he was expected to. The fact that he doesn't count against your current number, I don't know. I guess I'd probably give Nadab Joseph an extra look, but maybe Joseph's just more interested in going somewhere else. That's interesting to see. What is not quite as interesting for me, and frankly a little disappointing, is the fact that Jeff used some words I didn't like when it comes to Rick Gilbert. Giving Georgia pause, or I mean Tennessee's giving him pause about Georgia here, or, you know, kind of feeling like Georgia's maybe in a little bit of, did he say trouble? I don't know. You know, after having been apparently in Alabama this past weekend and still thinking maybe heavily about Tennessee here, Tennessee recruiting as a wide receiver I think is a complete and total joke. It just goes to show you what some schools will say to get what they want. I think that I think that Gilbert is a classic athletic tight end. That's how he's going to really flourish at the college level, whether it be in Georgia or somewhere else. But listen, recruiting is tough. It's hard. You got to out recruit the programs that are ahead of you. You got to keep the programs that are behind you below you. It's not easy for Kirby Smart, and this Rick Gilbert situation is not going to be easy either. But given the highlights we've seen of him, given the chatter that he's generated on this program, on Before the Hedges presented by Kroger and others, he has become a player that Dawg Nation really, really wants, myself included, speaking as a fan here for a moment. So, I don't know. That was not great from Jeff Sintel on that, but that is definitely a story worth watching. Before we roll through the rest of our SEC through, let me remind you about my friends at Merriweather and Tharp. You know, divorce is a tough subject. It's the kind of thing a lot of people don't want to talk about, frankly, but it's also the kind of thing that, statistically speaking, about half of us at some point in time might deal with. So if you find yourself in that situation right now, please know that Merriweather and Tharp really steps up and provides some generous options for those people going through what may be the hardest time you ever go through in all your life. I'm talking about thousands of free web pages, podcasts, divorce guides. These are free resources that can kind of set you up to start learning more about this process. And, you know, I've had a chance to meet the folks from Merriweather and Tharp. We've talked, we've hung out. And the one thing that you really come away with is that sense they want to help people through a difficult process. And, of course, you can get a free consultation with one of their attorneys as well. The best way for me to give you an idea of how to get in touch with them is to go to this website, theatlantadivorceteam.com. It's theatlantadivorceteam.com. You can find out more about Merriweather and Tharp. All right, let's do the SEC through. Update on a story we've covered before. Nick Saban at one point in time put a heavy challenge towards Tua Tagovailoa to be in like better shape and kind of finish this season better than he ended last season. And that kind of raised some eyebrows because it's, I guess, a part of what has been kind of a weird recent trend of maybe Tua having some doubters out there, most of that in comparison to Trevor Lawrence, who is now viewed by many people as being the top quarterback in college football, whereas halfway through last season, nobody would have compared anyone to Tua Tagovailoa. But when you lose the head-to-head matchup with Lawrence, some doubters emerge. When you are a year removed from your draft process, some of the NFL scout guys are going to be poking and prodding and kicking the tires just a little bit. And into that step, Nick Saban to kind of add to that some questions about Tagovailoa. Well, Saban has now responded back saying, no, this is Cecil Hurt from the Tuscaloosa News, who will quote Saban here in this regard, saying, no, Tua's doing everything we've asked for him this summer. He's even lost like 15 pounds. It's really amazing to me that the challenge that Saban issued to Tua was only like 2 weeks ago, or at least seemingly 2 weeks ago, and somehow Tua's already magically responded to that challenge. This all just feels like typical myth-making from Saban and the media, and people are none too happy to go along with whatever narrative he wants to establish because it means getting a quote from Saban. But you'll be happy to know, I guess, in Tuscaloosa that Tua Tagovailoa has responded to Saban's challenge. He's already lost 15 pounds, and he's ready to go for the upcoming season. A couple other quick stories I want to get to. Malik Langham, the former Florida defensive end, has reportedly, according to 24/7 Sports, announced his transfer destination. He's going to Vanderbilt. As somebody said to me on Twitter this morning, it's kind of bad for Florida when Vanderbilt now seems like a better option for Langham to play. The truth is, he had not really found the success at Florida that maybe he would have liked, and sometimes that is what happens. And Derek Mason's obviously a pretty good defensive-minded coach, so according to 24/7 Sports, Langham, a former pretty good signee, four-star signee with Florida, is on his way to Vanderbilt. Kind of an interesting story in the SEC the last couple of days. Chad Morris's son is a four-star quarterback. Morris, of course, the Arkansas coach. And Morris, the younger, has decided to go to Arkansas after fielding a lot of different offers. And Morris has been quoted a bunch in the media on this about how he had to kind of play the dual role of a coach who obviously wouldn't mind having a four-star quarterback, and also a dad who wanted to make sure his son made the best decision. Ultimately, I guess this is probably always destined to be Morris playing for his dad. But it's kind of an interesting, you know, situation to have a pretty good quarterback prospect playing for his dad there, a guy that's been really good at coaching quarterbacks over the years. Arkansas also maybe, you know, I thought Arkansas was, you know, pretty terrible last year and really had no recruiting momentum whatsoever. It's not quite the same way it used to be. This could be a program that's maybe a little bit more on the rise than some people might think. Let me do one more quick final SEC story here too, very briefly, and I just think this is weird. So Melvin McBride is a 2019 signee for Tennessee along its offensive line, and he is, quote, retired from football. He put this out on Twitter here over the last 24 hours or so, and he used that word. It's the same word that 8 other Tennessee players have used. Here's Melvin on Twitter saying, "I officially announced my retirement from football due to health problems. I'd just like to say that football has changed my life and blessed me in ways I could never imagine. But now God has a new journey for me. I won't pretend to be an expert on McBride's situation." And obviously some of these Tennessee situations have been incredibly serious. You know, for instance, someone who has not yet officially retired from football, Trey Smith, has pretty clearly been dealing with a medical situation that's got nothing to do with football injuries and the typical things we might talk about. So no doubt this Tennessee offensive line has been through a lot, and a lot of these retirements recently have been on the offensive line. But as David Ubben from The Athletic has kind of reported on, 9 retirements for whatever reason just seems like a lot. And if you went through and looked at all the individual reasons for all these things, you may find every single one of them is just as different as they can be, and they're all unique, and not one compares to the other. But somehow, some way, this seems like a very statistically odd occurrence. What's truly going on at Tennessee with all of this? I think at some point in time, somebody's going to have to ask that question. And for now, though, we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, as promised, you know, lately we haven't really been doing kind of a sanctioned summer Q&A. The truth is, y'all just like, you know, making whatever comments you want. But a part of our regular broadcast, I like to try to squeeze some of these in and make you guys get a chance to interact and be a part of this. And we'll kind of do some of that right now, including Justin Carter on Facebook, who says Tua has been exposed, going back to what Nick Saban had said earlier, but they play nobody until they go to Atlanta. So he basically says that some of this criticism that came from Tua Tagovailoa is because he got exposed by some of the better defenses that he played. And there's no doubt that when you look at Tua's stats, there's a big difference between some of those early season games when they were playing weak competition in 2018, what started happening later on in the year once they started playing the better defenses. It is fair to say that Tua did not play his best against the best defenses that Alabama faced back last season. Will that change this upcoming year? I think it's probably a question worth asking. And does that mean that he compares inferiorly to Trevor Lawrence? And really even Jake Fromm, who I think, even though Tua's teams have gotten the wins these last 2 years, I think that Fromm, for the most part, has played just fine against Alabama. I think another head-to-head matchup between those quarterbacks could be very interesting to see there as well. Let me get a couple more comments as a part of our Dog Nation Daily kind of relaxed summer vibe here just for a minute. By the way, Ron West checking in to say the Panhandle loves the Dogs. It's always nice to see. It's amazing how far Dog Nation stretches here, for sure. Nager Yang says, "Does Cade Mays have a younger brother? Just saw another Mays from Knoxville, Tennessee, trending to a school on 24/7. Yeah, Cooper Mays is Cade Mays' brother. And, you know, just given how many offensive linemen Georgia's in the mix with, it seems like maybe Georgia and Cooper Mays aren't likely to sort of set up a connection with each other. Not because Cooper's not a really good player, it's just because Georgia has just had an incredible run of offensive line recruiting as of late. But even if Cooper doesn't end up at Georgia, it seems like he's going to have no shortage of options overall, for sure. Got time for maybe one more comment. Here's part of our regular broadcast before we go on. Roe Hawkins says, on the subject of Alabama, he says that maybe Georgia has the depth this season to finally beat Alabama. I think there's a very good chance that's the case. I think that Georgia, we talked about this off the top of the program, has established a lot more credentials with its overall roster, and that may be used to its advantage this season against Alabama included. So if you're watching on video, we'll take more of your comments coming up as part of our R.S. Andrews Cooldown. We love doing that on the program each and every day, and we'll get the YouTube folks involved as well. And, of course, if you don't get a chance to watch the show live, if you listen to it either on the radio or the podcast or whatever else, you want to be a part of our conversation, I would always welcome your comments. You can reach out to me on Twitter, at Dog Nation Daily. I'd love to hear from you there. Something else I also love doing is sharing with you the good news. The fact that around here we believe that good Georgia fans are Gator haters. It's been an awesome offseason for Gator haters. Florida's had its share of trouble, and, well, we think the trouble is going to continue for a while. In fact, it's been heading this way for a while. 961 days. That's how long it's been since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. We think that's good news and a great way to close out Dog Nation Daily here today. Good stuff from Jeff Sintel. Make sure you read more from him with Kendall Milton and Andrew Raymond at DogNation.com. I will see you back here tomorrow for Dog Nation Daily once again.